I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. The bad news is still sinking in places like Kittery, Maine and Groton, Connecticut, where thousands of local and military jobs are about to be lost in the closure of major shipyards. Now, what bad news for those bases will end up boosting the workforce at other bases in Virginia and in the Pacific. It's all part of the way that the U.S. military reorganizes itself under what's called the BRAC, or Base Realignment and Closure. It's a system that's supposed to be as apolitical as possible under the circumstances. At least that's how it's explained by Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld.
The changes that will occur will affect a number of communities. Communities that have warmly embraced nearby military installations for a good many years, indeed in some cases decades. The department will take great care to work with these communities with the respect that they have earned, and the government stands ready with economic assistance.
These latest base closings follow a long history of such announcements, the most recent in the late 80s and the early 90s, and this hour we'd like to hear from you. Do you think the system of moving people and moving bases is fair? And is it as free from political interference as it can be? Is the military moving in the right direction by reducing the number of bases and bringing people home from overseas posts? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That is 1-800-423-TALK. And we're starting on the program now with Jeremiah Gertler. He's in the Christian Science Monitor studio in Washington. He works as a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And Jeremiah was a member of the 1995 BRAC Commission. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Delighted to be with you, Dick. I do have to straighten out one thing, lest I be stoned by the commissioners. I was a senior analyst on the staff of the commission. I was not actually appointed as a commissioner.
I have made that correction already. Great.
Quite all right.
So place this series of announcements in that context for me. I mean, there was so much talk leading up to this that, in fact, there would be more dramatic announcements. Did the Secretary of Defense back off at the last minute?
The Secretary of Defense indicated a couple of weeks before these announcements came out that, in fact, there were going to be fewer than had been rumored. Whether originally the list was bigger is not clear, but certainly people were expecting recommendations of 300 to 400 base closures, and the list came out under 200.
And when people point to the map and say, see, stuff is shifting to the south and to the west, is that an accident of geography or is that intentional?
It's not intentional. It is an accident, not of geography so much as of some of the attributes of the southern and western bases. For example, in the south and the west, there's a lot more sunny days. It's easier to do pilot training there. You get more days when you can fly. Some of the southern and western bases are just naturally larger. They had more room to expand when they were built, so they can accommodate some of the missions that are currently being done in the east and the north.
And something about where the threat moves to. I mean, for example, it might have made sense to fix up the nuclear submarines at a base in Maine when the North Atlantic was the primary area of operation. Are we looking at a shift to the Pacific? Is that a part of this?
That's a small part of this, but it's very interesting. You touch on the idea of consolidating bases. This is clearly a Defense Department that is no longer haunted by the specter of Pearl Harbor. The underlying theme of much of this closure list is consolidation. Take our submarines, put more of them into fewer places. The same with ships, the same with airplanes. They are less concerned about the effects of an attack on one base or one area, for example, taking out a large portion of our combat capability.
I do want to ask you the political question, though, Jeremiah, because I saw at the tail end of a story in this morning's paper that someone's done the math here and figured out that if you look at the states that voted for John Kerry or the Democrats in the last election, they lose over 24,000 military and civilian jobs, while states that Mr. Bush carried gain nearly 12,000 jobs. Is that being seen as a part of the equation here?
Well, that's what the Base Closure Commission was created to weed out of the process. One of the great paradoxes in Washington and around the country is that the Base Closure Commission doesn't close bases. It's the court of appeal by which communities can step up and say, this was politically motivated. DOD did the numbers wrong. And the commission looks at it analytically and says, yay or nay, are the numbers in accordance with the recommendation, or did somebody put their thumb on the scale here?
Let's bring another voice in. Nathan Hill has been listening along. He is joining us on the line from Anniston, Alabama. He's military liaison for the Calhoun County Chamber of Commerce. Nathan, it's good of you to join us.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
I'm interested in how people down there are looking at this. You got some good news on this, if I understand it correctly, with the expansion of an Army depot in Anniston. Is that right?
Yes, sir. We, based on the recommendations, we were to receive an additional 1,034 spaces.
And do people see that as a political decision or as a common sense decision? How is it being viewed there, Nathan?
Well, we reviewed this process from the beginning because a few years ago we were on the unfortunate side where we had a base on the other side of town, Fort McClellan, that was actually closed in the 95 base realignment closure process. So we've tracked this all along, and we felt the installation we had based on the criteria that the commission was going to be looking at, which was primarily military value, that our installation certainly stacked up and was capable of doing the mission they were doing and many additional missions that could be added there, because we knew our capacity was certainly not being stretched and we were capable of adding missions.
So can you then say, looking back, Nathan, that it was a strong political case that you could make by saying, hey, we lost Fort McClellan, help us out a bit here in expanding the Army depot in Anniston?
Well, we try not to look at it that way. What we were trying to look at is, does our installation have military value? We were trying to forget the past and forget other people that may be looked at in comparison to us, and just trying to stress the value of our military installation, from at least from a community standpoint. And that's the way we approached it. We didn't want to point fingers at any other installations, point fingers at the past, just stand on our merits. And I think that's what we did, and I think the Department of Defense did an outstanding job evaluating the installations, as far as I can tell from the report, based on the criteria that was set forth.
Nathan, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Nathan Hill, military liaison for Calhoun County Chamber of Commerce in Alabama. Let's swing straight to the north here, and we're going to speak with Captain William D. McDonough, who's joining us on the line from Kittery, Maine. Captain McDonough is a retired captain from the U.S. Navy, former shipyard commander of the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard, and speaking out, I believe, now for the Seacoast Shipyard Association, Captain. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Not the first time this base has been marked foreclosure. Are you looking at this as a more serious threat today?
No, it's a very serious one. But in the past, we were recommended for closure only once, and that was 40 years ago when Secretary of Defense McNamara made the recommendation to close us on a phase out over 10 years. In the previous BRACs in the 90s, we were not on the Secretary of Defense's recommended list. We were put on, quote, a list that was developed by the commission for those activities in the country that they felt they had to look at in order to evaluate what the secretary had recommended. And in both cases, when they looked at us, our position was reaffirmed, and basically we were saying that the Navy and the Defense Department were correct that time in not recommending us, but many people think we were on a BRAC list. Not quite, but we were considered for it, as was every base this time around. Theoretically, they were all considered equally by the Defense Department.
Okay, but you listened to Nathan Hill saying that the decision, as far as the people in Alabama are concerned, was one made on the merits. When you look at the decision by the Navy and the Defense Department, the Secretary of Defense this time around, do you think that the decision to close the shipyard in Kittery is made on its merits, or do you think it's political?
Well, it certainly wasn't on its merits. The decision was a, in our judgment, dastardly rejection of all of the data. They say that the base closure process is designed to enhance efficiency and cost savings, and it's ironic that the one Navy yard, one shipyard in the country that has consistently performed its job in less time at the top level of quality and millions of dollars below all the other yards, it just doesn't make sense. It's contradictory to what they say. They come out and they say, save, save, save. The shipyard has done that and returned hundreds of millions of dollars over the last several years, plus over a year's submarine operating time, both of which are major contributions, and yet they come out and recommend close. The day before the closure list came out, the Secretary of the Navy awarded the shipyard a special merit award for excellence. This award has only been given out to Navy activities five times in 30 years. And then the day after, he sticks the knife in the back. Secretary of the Navy, obviously supporting Mr. Rumsfeld, made the recommendation for reasons that make no sense. They seem to be absolutely contrary to all the data that's there, and we are optimistic that in our defense of the shipyard, we'll be able to point out the inconsistencies of where he has taken existing data and either distorted it or manipulated it in such a manner as to support his recommendation. And we think that we have a good case of countering that.
And just in a couple of words here, Captain, because we're coming up to a break, and I need you to be brief, but when you speak in defense of that shipyard, is that as a civilian today, a nearby resident who sees the economic effect of it closing on neighbors, or are you using your judgment as the former commander of that shipyard to say it's a bad call?
All of the above, I think. And we think that the military value of this shipyard has been grossly underestimated because they say things like the geographic location. That's not pertinent for repair activities. That pertains to operating bases, and we're never going to be an operating base. We're a repair activity.
All right, Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. This is the beginning of a debate that we're going to hear a lot more of as the towns and the cities finding themselves impacted by the latest recommendations are figuring out ways of defending themselves. Is this a political process, or as apolitical as it can possibly be under the circumstances? What do you think of the system that's in place now for moving people and bases around? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. We know that there is politics wrapped up every time we talk about military contracts going to one part of the country or another part of the country. The people who put together the BRAC system were busy trying to find some way of reorganizing, realigning, closing bases that didn't fall prey to the same kind of politics that's so much a part of these decisions. Have they succeeded? Can this work in an apolitical way? We'd like to hear from you. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Captain William McDonough remains with us on the line from Kittery, Maine. He's the retired U.S. Navy captain and former commander of the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard. Jeremiah Gertler is with us from a studio in Washington. He's a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and also was senior analyst with the 1995 BRAC Commission. Jeremiah, just a bit of process here before we move along. What happens now? All the announcements have been made. The commission is struck. Is this the moment when Captain McDonough and the others all get a chance to make their case to the commission members?
This is really the first time that the communities will have had a voice in the process. What happens is that yesterday the Department of Defense revealed all the data that they used in reaching their decisions. The communities will now look at that data and make submissions to the Base Closure Commission saying, DOD's wrong here. They didn't give proper value to something that we have as part of our base over there. And that happens really in three places. One is that there are submissions from the communities to the Base Closure Commission staff all through the process, constantly data coming in to be processed by the staff. Second,
some of that stuff's been coming in for months, right? It didn't just start last week.
Well, some of it has, but mostly the communities needed to see what DOD was saying in order to rebut it.
Okay.
And right now, they have that opportunity. Second, every base that's on this list for closure or realignment will be visited by at least one, and for major closures such as Portsmouth, I suspect several of the commissioners, as well as members of the staff,
right,
so that they can see what the ground truth is, whether what they see with their own eyes matches what they're reading on their pieces of paper. And third, there are regional hearings held around the country, and that's when the communities get to make their formal presentation in front of all of the base closure commissioners at once to say, this is why we think DOD got the numbers wrong.
Let me, if I can, introduce one other guest who's going to be with us. Tim Ford is joining us on the line from Washington. He's executive director of the Association for Defense Communities. And Tim, your organization is one that represents the interests of all communities that have active or closed or closing defense installations. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. We're one of the few organizations or groups right now that doesn't have a position on whether a base should or should not be closed. We're focused on really the impacts of this BRAC process and helping communities, whether it be closure, realignment, or mission growth.
So what are you saying now to people in Kittery, Maine, or New London, Connecticut, who are still scratching their heads over what the impact of the announcement will be? Are you saying we're going to be representing your interests, or are you taking a more neutral position?
We really stay in a neutral position. What we're really focused on is trying to help communities think about the plan B, and we know it's important to keep fighting and keep working to get off the base closure list, but experience has taught us that it's also important at the same time to be thinking about some contingency plans and to start that process of thinking about life after closure.
And has experience also taught you that even if a community can make a powerful case for what the impact of losing 2,000 or 3,000 jobs might be, that the decision is going to be one that's based more on defense needs rather than community interests?
Yes, it really is a decision based on technical merits versus necessarily the emotional case of a community. So in the statistics are really against, you know, there's about 85% of the decisions from DOD in previous rounds have remained. So we just feel it's important for communities to, you know, continue that fight, but at the same time start looking at the plan B.
And Captain McDonough, I look down the list of the people on the commission and I see former Admiral Gaiman. I think that's I pronounce his name correctly.
Yes, pretty good.
35 years in the Navy, former NATO Supreme Allied Commander, no doubt a former colleague of yours.
Well, somewhat, but he was not in the submarine community.
Okay.
But Admiral Gaiman is certainly a well-qualified and fair and objective individual, which all we can ask for from these people right now.
Well, the reason I raise his name is that I know that you and your people are looking at the list and saying, okay, can we make this case? Can you make the case?
We certainly believe we can. There are a couple of features. One is, you know, we're a Navy nuclear capable activity. There are only 6 entities in the country that have the wherewithal to work on the nuclear ships. 4 of them are Navy yards and 2 are private shipyards. The Secretary has come up with information that he claims shows that there's excess capacity within 4 Navy yards, and therefore he's going to reduce the size, and when he reduces it, the work will move over to the private sector, some of it. We don't think the numbers that they have used to come up with a capacity thing is even close to correct. We think that the data will clearly show that they really should keep all 4 Navy yards and the 2 private shipyards. We have irreplaceable assets here. For example, our harbor and the dry docks and the nuclear license, none of them are portable, and they are a representative percentage of the total that's available to the Navy. 3 dry docks here, all nuclear certified for submarines, and elsewhere you've got to keep in mind if they have 5 or 6 dry docks, unless they are exceptionally deep dry docks, submarines can't get in and out of them. Submarine needs as much water for a dry dock as a aircraft carrier. So there are certain things that we think they've absolutely shown poor judgment in giving up, because once it's gone, you can't reconstitute it.
And there will be, Jeremiah mentioned, opportunity for the base to be visited, regional hearings, chances for the communities to have input. Connection listeners, we'd like to know what your input is on this. We're going to take a call from Connecticut. John's joining us on the line from there. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks. Are you anywhere near Groton? Are you looking at the situation there?
Well, yeah, actually, I'm transferring up there right now from Kings Bay, Georgia. So I was on a Trident out of there for 5 years.
And what do you think?
Well, I mean, honestly, I was stationed in Groton for a year before I went down to Georgia, and the base in general is very run down and old. In order to modernize it, just the housing situation alone is going to cost, you know, quite a bit of money. And, you know, just school days, you know, you mentioned, you know, the weather in southern states is good for flying, but not only that, it's good for the students going to the Naval Submarine School there. And
John, let me interrupt you here for half a sec. Did you get the impression, looking at the state of the base in Groton, that they've let it go, knowing that sooner or later it's going to be shut down?
Well, that's a definite possibility, and the other thing is that base has been there for 100 years, and it's probably the smallest base that I will ever be stationed on. It's only 800 and something acres, and it, relatively speaking, there's no room to expand to meet any future needs.
Let me, if I can, turn to Tim Ford with the Association for Defense Communities. You go in, you talk to the people at Groton. If your conclusion is the same as John's, what do you say? That, you know, look, let this one go. Here are 20 different options for what could happen with this land?
Well, I think, as I said before, we would never have an issue with communities fighting and continuing this process, because what happens this summer is very important for the communities to work on. But there is a lot of lessons learned. We can look at previous closures and the redevelopment projects that have occurred around the country, and I think that there could be some lessons that would even apply to this base. No base redevelopment project is easy, and this is not an easy process to go through, but there is life after base closure. It's a tough process, but communities have worked their way through it.
And Jeremiah, people in Groton area, as well as people in the Kittery area, are themselves thinking, okay, there are these public rallies, Save the Shipyard. Does any of that make a difference at that point, or is the kind of process underway for a more academic examination? I mean, when people go out to protest, is anyone listening?
Well, the enthusiasm of the community can't help but affect commissioners. I'm reminded of Mississippi Congressman Sonny Montgomery, who took an unusual approach. When the base closure commissioners came to town, lots of folks think of this as a terrible thing. And he would put them on the back of convertibles and run a parade through the middle of town with bands and the public out cheering to show their support for the base. And he did very well in the process. The commissioners are affected by that, but in the end, it really is the numbers that decide. John, when he called in, mentioned what he perceived as the cost of fixing up the base.
Yeah.
The department in the last round was willing to spend $231 million to close a single base. In fact, it was Fort McClellan in Anniston. The recommendation regarding Portsmouth Naval Shipyard, where Captain McDonough is nearly $500 million that the department is willing to spend to close it rather than fix it up.
Now, is that money that will go into the destruction of the dry docks and the cleaning up of the land, or is there money there that's going to be offered to people to start new industries?
Probably both. Most of the money, though, goes in creating new facilities at the places where the various bases' jobs are going to. It is the cost of the total transfer rather than specifically to close the losing base.
And Captain McDonough, I guess that would be a good question to leave you with, and that is there a point at which you say, we're not winning this argument, we need to figure out how we can get as much money for the base closure and you know, the conversion of this into something useful?
No, not at all, not at this time. Situation with the shipyard is, first of all, we're hopeful that we'll not be finalized as a closer. But if it is, there still is work that's scheduled for the next couple of years. The
right.
Law says you have to start closure action in 2 years and complete in six. There's work to be done for the couple of years, and it's not like taking your car to the local garage and finding it's full. We'll go to one of the other garages. There's no place for it to go. There's only a very limited number in the country. So we have plenty of time to worry about redevelopment if, in fact, we do lose the battle. And we think that the facts are such that we're quite optimistic that we will convince them. I don't know where that $500 million to close the place came up with. That's a bogus number, whatever it is. We are the oldest shipyard in the country, yet we are the most modern for several reasons, not the least of which is Secretary McNamara tried to close it and set us back, and then we regained in the 70s and 80s.
Jeremiah, do you want to clarify that, where that number came from?
That's actually in the department's recommendation. They are required to say what they think the closure of each base or the realignment of each base will cost. And their estimate was, I believe, $434 million to carry out the realignment at Portsmouth.
But one of the problems is we haven't got any of that data yet. As somebody mentioned, it's just now becoming available. The commission is already complaining that the Department of Defense is dragging its feet on a lot of it. And that is not to be not a surprise to us, because they're looking to make sure that their recommendations stand up, and anything they can do to impede defeat, they will do. We're anxious to get it. It's been conducted in extreme secrecy. Nobody knows what's in the data. The Base Closure Commission is all brand new. They're scurrying around as they get information to find out, and we're anxiously awaiting getting it so we can see what the Secretary of Defense built his case upon, so we can piece by piece, dismantle it and discredit it.
Captain McDonough, just one more for you, though. Does this at some point reach a level where it's, you know, people in Kittery, Maine competing against people in Virginia and people in Bremerton, Washington, people in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, everybody trying to get those jobs?
No, it's not a matter of competing like that. We are very firm in our belief that our contribution to the welfare of the nation is certainly worth keeping, and that the decision the Secretary made is colossally wrong. His track record on making good decisions is not the sterling one.
Captain McDonough, we will follow this, and I thank you for speaking with us today on the program.
You're welcome.
Captain William D. McDonough is retired U.S. Navy captain, former commander of the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard, and now spokesman for the Seacoast Shipyard Association. Tim Ford, just before we go back to our callers, a question from you in your role as sort of heading up defense communities. Do you find yourself caught between, you know, people in Bremerton, Washington, and people in Kittery, Maine who are saying, no, we need this work. We need those jobs. How do you serve both?
Well, I think at this time of year, especially after a BRAC list is out, we, you know, there's a lot of our members are, I guess, in a sense, competing against each other. But I think that there's common interest between all communities to support the military. And, you know, they'll work very hard on this process. But when the process is concluded, they'll accept recommendations and either move forward with redevelopment or continue working with their active military installation.
One of our earlier callers, John, was talking about comparing his work in Groton, Connecticut with Kings Bay Naval Base in South Georgia. We now have, from that naval base, Alan joining us on the line from South Georgia. Hi, Alan.
Good morning.
Tell me how you see this process.
As a taxpayer in the South, living amongst very large military bases, I see this as a very efficient way to make the military better in an apolitical way and to decrease the cost for taxpayers over long term, maybe looking at 50 years.
And when people in New England see that as a shift of bases and jobs to the South, what's the explanation that you offer them? Because you know people, nobody likes to see jobs and industry leaving their towns.
I certainly understand that. You can look at the business model, all the companies moving from the Northeast into Atlanta, Birmingham, and places like that where they find land, resources, better educated people in many cases, the ability to bring people from the Northeast that want to move to the South, perhaps to retire or before their retirement. They see a major change in their cost structure for those companies. I think the military is thinking in the same way because their customers, the taxpayers, have seen very large bills for fighting these wars over 50, 60 years now.
You probably get an argument from people up here when you talk about where the better educated people are near the bases. But rather than go down that road, what about the recruits themselves? I mean, does it matter that more of them may be coming from the South and the West? Is that a factor that ought to be taken into consideration?
I think that is a major factor. Most of our military in all branches, a predominance is coming from the South and from the West. And it's obvious that the military is reorienting to the South and obviously to the West because of the nature of the Pacific and the rise of China. We are just restructuring. I believe we may pull back even more from Europe and prepare ourselves more for South America, Africa, Asia, and particularly China.
Alan, I thank you for your call. Quick one, Jeremiah, from you, just on how the calculation is made. When people in the South say, look, all the recruits are coming from our neighboring communities, does it make sense? Does it not make sense to have the bases here? Is that a factor that counts?
It actually is not. The Base Closure Commission is mainly looking at costs and the process that the department used in arriving at the recommendations.
All right, and there is one more feature which we will talk about when we come back after the break, and that is that this is really only just a part of the puzzle. There is, on defense planning books, lots of talk about stripping down the size of overseas bases in Germany and also in other places, though that is not a part of the equation here. It certainly has an effect on the shape of the military here in the United States. But without that piece of the puzzle, can they actually go ahead in deciding where bases and where depots and where repair and maintenance is going to be? We'd like to hear from you about this process of realigning and closing bases. Does it work? Is it apolitical? We're at 1-800 800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection this hour. We're talking about the decision announced late last week. 30-some base closures, lots of people being moved around, and a lot of closing of smaller bases, Reserve and National Guard bases being consolidated. And already we're beginning to hear some questions and concerns about the distance which some of those people may have to travel. There are many questions about how these decisions are made. This hour we're talking about the way the process works and whether or not it's fair. What do you think? We're at 1-800-423-8255. With me on the program, Jeremiah Gertler, senior analyst with the 95 BRAC Commission. BRAC stands for Base Alignment and Closure. He's also a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And Tim Ford is with us. He's executive director of the Association for Defense Communities. We're going next to Mystic, Connecticut. Veronique's joining us on the line. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. My question is basically, I'm wondering how much has been estimated as a total cost for the closing and realignment of all those bases. And given the experience that we have of how off the mark the government and the Department of Defense have been in estimating the cost of the Iraq war and all of that, should we kind of reevaluate what they're announcing by like tripling the number that they're giving and really looking at a real cost of three times what they're announcing?
Well,
you know what I mean? I mean, the government of Department of Defense.
Veronique, what I want you to do is stay with me on the phone. If we don't quite get to the point that you're raising, then I'll just check back in with you. But let me, if I can, turn to Tim Ford on this one. Tim, what I read was something like $50 billion to be saved over 20 years. Did I get that right?
I think that's the correct statistic. Maybe Jeremiah has the report in front of him to get all the numbers. It's about 1,000 pages of data. The experience from the previous rounds is the sort of estimates on cost savings are very hard to calculate, and DOD's books are not set up to really track cost savings very well. So there has been, some issues on calculating that, but I think that the military is fairly confident of their ability to cost this BRAC and figure out what the cost savings will be.
Jeremiah, do you want to add anything to that?
A couple of things. One is that I did find the right number for Portsmouth in the report, at least, and it's $448 million.
Okay, thanks.
But here's the trick. The department's recommendations have to pay off within 20 years. That's the time horizon by which they have to have saved as much money as they're spending up front on the closure. They estimate, in the case of Portsmouth, for example, that they'll save that money back in 4 years. So even if they are off by a factor of three, as Veronique suggests they might be, they're still going to save enough over 20 years to make the requirement, or rather the recommendation, worthwhile.
So can you say then without doubt to Veronique that there is going to be some savings? Measuring it may be a little bit difficult in over time, but that the savings do occur?
Studies have shown that the savings do occur, and also that communities wind up with better economic activity after a base closure than before, for two reasons. One, they're no longer dependent for their economic activity on an annual appropriation from Washington. It becomes private sector and is generally a broader kind of economic activity. But the real trick with that is that there's about a 10-year trough that the community has to go through before they get back to where they were with the base.
Veronique, was that what you were looking for? I think Veronique may have left us there. Just a reminder, our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Tim, if I can come back to you, your experience here with the closure of bases, do you have one sort of overriding lesson that you can pass along to the people in communities that are thinking they're going to be hit hard by this? What would that be?
I think at this early stage, what we're trying to communicate is that there is life after base closure. It's not necessarily the message that people want to hear right now, but we know that there's experiences, there's lessons that we can relate from the previous rounds, and there's a lot of tools out there that will help communities through this process if they're ultimately closed. I think that the as Jeremiah mentioned, that in for communities who face closure, the job gains and sort of the overall economic picture after a decade is usually pretty good. One of our best examples is the Denver region that lost two bases in a matter of a couple years, Fitzsimmons Army Medical Center and the Lowry Air Force Base. You know, they had lost about 8,000 jobs between the both of them. 10 years later now, both those bases are going through massive transformations, and they have actually become the new economic engine for the Denver metro region. And Lowry alone is pumping about $4 billion into the local economy. So it's there is life after base closure, but it's going to be a tough process for communities to get through.
1-800-423-8255 to Acton, Massachusetts. Mary's with us. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I actually have a question that is more about the security issues involved here. I'm aware that both Otis Air Force Base on the Cape is cited for closure, and Brunswick Naval Air Station in Maine is realigned, which really means they're all but closed except they don't get the land. In either case, it seems as though all of the air power is going to be in the south or the far west, and here we have the Northeast Corridor with Washington, D.C., New York, Boston. If we close down all sort of first responders, such as happened after 9/11, what happens? I realize the focus is on the mm-hmm. Pacific more now, but what happens to the Northeast in terms of basic security?
Jeremiah, what about that?
That's part of the consideration, actually. When the commission considers these closures, what they're looking at fundamentally is whether the recommendations that came forth support the national military strategy that the secretary has propounded. And if there is a hole left in our security, clearly that's a recommendation that the commission would look at with some skepticism.
And can does the commission carry the kind of weight that they would be able to turn around to say to someone as strong-willed as Secretary Rumsfeld, you've made a mistake on this one. This base should not close.
Well, they've done it time and again, and in fact, over history, in about 15% of the cases. They've said either the numbers didn't add up or something else wasn't right about this recommendation, and therefore, when the commission says no, it's no.
And there's one more question about the overall thinking that I mentioned prior to the break, and that was mm-hmm. that the European planning is not a part of this. The BRAC system takes a look just at domestic bases, right?
That's true. There is actually a separate commission that looks at the overseas bases. And I think that uncertainty is part of why Secretary Rumsfeld, shortly before issuing this list, said it's not going to be as long as people thought. There are bases that do not appear here that were expected to be listed for closure or at least significant realignment. Bases like Fort Riley, Kansas, Fort Carson, Colorado, Fort Drum in New York, which host major Army maneuver units. The issue of whether we have room to bring back the Army units from Europe probably saved at least one of those bases from being on the list.
Though it's still a question. Those decisions, those European decisions, have not been made or have not been announced, right?
Not all of them have, right.
1-800-423-8255, next to Elizabeth City, North Carolina. Bob's joining us. Hello, Bob.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call.
Yeah.
I'd like to raise a comment or a question about the cleanup costs for all of these bases that are closing, particularly something like a submarine base. Apparently, many of these bases are still on the Superfund cleanup sites with no money in sight to in view to clean them up. How is that going to be handled?
Tim Ford, is that a part of the money that is set aside, or is that all of it? What do we know?
The environmental cleanup is a significant issue with base redevelopment. The funding for environmental cleanup will actually come from a variety of different sources, but there is a federal obligation to clean up the bases. Most of these bases, over the last decade, the military has actually been working to clean up its active military installations. So some of these bases are already going through a cleanup process at this point. But we won't know really the whole perspective on what the characterization of the base is until after the closure process is completed, later this year.
And Bob makes that connection to the Superfund money, which is no longer as accessible for communities to clean up these areas. I don't know, Jeremiah, if the military then pads up that extra amount of money that might be required so the cleanup is done to the satisfaction of environmental engineers.
Well, that is part of the base closure process. There are, as Tim says, a number of funds, but there are specific identified funds in the base closure process for environmental cleanup at bases. One of the changes that Congress made to the rules between the 1995 round and this round was to elevate the importance of environmental concerns. So it is much easier now for a base to argue you can't close us because of the cost of environmental cleanup than it was 10 years ago.
1-800-423-8255. We're going next to Hampton, Virginia, and Mike is joining us on the line from there. Hello, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, my question is, with the Army fighting a war at the moment, how does realigning seven major TRADOC schools affect the possible readiness of the Army?
What kind of schools are you referring to there, Mike?
Well, for example, moving the transportation school from Fort Eustis to Fort Lee.
Right.
Moving the aviation logistics school, moving the armor school to Fort Benning, the air defense artillery to Fort Sill. A lot of turmoil when we're trying to train soldiers to fight a war.
It's a great question because it's hard to know what horizon to focus on here in terms of why the decisions are announced now, when they come into effect, and what their impact will be on soldiers who are there now or going to be there in 2 years. Jeremiah, how do they figure that all out?
Well, they follow the wing walker's dictum that you don't let go of one strut of the airplane until you got your hand on the next one. When Fort McClellan, Alabama was closed, it had the only facility where you could train with live agent chemical munitions in the world. There was a concern that we'd lose our chemical training capability at a time when terrorist threats were already known to exist. But the commission's recommendation said you may not close this facility until the new one in the gaining location is operational. They'll probably do the same thing with these schools, which means that someone going to that particular training will go to a different base to receive the training, but the school will be there and operational.
And so when we back away from the whole process and look at what is ahead, my reading of the timeline from the BRAC website, and I should make mention to our listeners, if you're interested in finding out more about this, we've gathered together a number of links, both for BRAC, pictures from Kittery, Maine, the naval station there, if you're interested in looking at that, all on our website. We're at theconnection.org. But Jeremiah, if we back away from the whole process, are you confident, or can you say to people that under the circumstances the decisions are about as apolitical as they could be under the circumstances?
Under the circumstances, they really are. In 20 years in Washington, this is the least politically influenced process I've seen. And that is part of why the commission was created, in order to make sure that no one administration of whatever party could put out a base closure list that just targeted states or areas that it didn't like. That the commission exists to make sure the communities have a voice to call foul if it looks like a political consideration is taking precedence.
Tim Ford, you know how political Washington can be, and how important these kinds of issues are to congressional representatives and senators as well. Yet, would you agree with Jeremiah that under the circumstances, it's about as apolitical as it can be?
I think it really is very close to being apolitical, but nothing in this town is completely free of politics. I think the one example of how politics aren't really a part of these decisions is playing out in South Dakota with the decision to close the recommendation to close Ellsworth Air Force Base in South Dakota, where Senator Thune had made a very big pitch, and that was part of that whole election campaign.
Right.
So it's about as apolitical, but the real politics are going to be the local politics in the weeks to come, because that's where all of this is going to be moving now, and it really is political theater all across the country as this process plays out.
And I suspect that our caller from Plattsburgh, New York, has some perspective on that. Mike, you saw these kind of closures 10 years ago. Am I right with that?
Yes. We were home to the 3/8-inch bombardment wing here in Plattsburgh, which was a FB 111 fighter wing and a refueling station, the oldest military installation in the United States. The BRAC committee recommended a closure. There was some political infighting. There was downstate bases here in New York between the senators and various local politicians. And to make a long story short, they came up with a thing that counteracted the commission's report as to the closure, but it closed anyway.
So more to the point, where is Plattsburgh today? I mean, when you look back over that, are you saying that you didn't come out ahead? You did come out ahead. What's your review?
My view right now is after about 10 years, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. The local airport is moving to the airstrip here. We're going to be a brand new airport's going to be put in. There's a lot of local businesses that came. We had a committee here that was called PARC, Plattsburgh Air Force Realignment Committee, and they marketed the base. We're very close to the Canadian border. We've got some Canadian businesses. A lot of local people are here. It's slowly coming around. There's some housing that has been redeveloped and sold off to private individuals. The old officers' quarters, which are old brownstone-type buildings that are on the oval on the old base, which faces Lake Champlain, have been bought and are being sold.
Mike, so, I'm just going to step in here and put a last question to Jeremiah, because I think really what Mike's telling us here, Jeremiah, is bearing out what you said, that there's a long waiting period that people need to get ready for here. The transformation is not a quick one.
It is not a quick one. It varies somewhat. If you look at the New England bases like Portsmouth, like Groton, there's a lot of other jobs and economic activity in the area. It's a lot harder on the rural communities where the base provides a substantial portion of the economy.
Jeremiah, I want to thank you for being with us on the show today.
Glad to be with you.
Jeremiah Gertler, Senior Fellow, Center for Strategic and International Studies, and Tim Ford, thanks for your time as well.
Thank you.
Tim is Executive Director of the Association for Defense Communities. Earlier on the program, we talked with Captain William D. McDonough, former shipyard commander of the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard, and Nathan Hill, military liaison for the Calhoun County, Alabama Chamber of Commerce. It is undoubtedly a story that we will spend more time on looking at in the future. Our program is produced by Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenollosa, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugertz. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.